What did happen? Okay. See, we did crash. It was on this crazy island. And we waited for rescue, and there wasn't a rescue. And then there was a smoke monster. And then there were other people on the island. We called them the others. And they started attacking us. And we found some hatches, and there was a button you had to push every 180 minutes, or... Well, I was never really clear on that. But the others didn't have anything to do with the hatches. That was the Dharma Initiative. They were all dead. The others killed them. And now they're trying to kill us. And then we teamed up with the others because some worse people were coming on a freighter. Desmond's girlfriend's father sent them to kill us. So we stole their helicopter, and we flew it to their freighter, but it blew up. And we couldn't go back to the island because it disappeared. So then we crashed in the ocean, and we floated there for a while until a boat came and picked us up. And by then, there were six of us. That part was true.
I came on a plane.
What plane?
A Jira Flight 316. And that's how I returned to the island.
So, why him?
What was it that was so wrong with me? What about me?
What about you?
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 6, Episode 3, What Kate Does. And I have a question for all of you. What do you eat at the Temple Food Court, which Miles name drops in this episode? Very funny, but so is this question. My name's Dave Gonzalez, one of your three hosts, and I'm eating at Mikhail's Single Cow Frozen Yogurt Stand.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and I'm eating at the Fish Biscuit and Chippery. That's what I'll be having in the Temple Food Court.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm having a boar burger from Polar Bear Express.
Ooh, I get the joke there. They're both exotic type of bears. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us, or visiting the island, or flashing sideways for the very first time. Each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. Then a second section called The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. If you look down at your podcasting device, you will see time codes where each of these sections occur, should you want to skip around or revisit them. For the final season of Lost, we've shifted to releasing the podcast on Saturday evening in the U.S. after our group live watch in our Storm Slack. How do you join that Storm Slack, you will ask? Why? You go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you can subscribe for a monthly fee at different levels, and different levels unlock different bonus content. At our top level, you get to join us for our secret movie club. Joanna, what are we watching this month?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a Dave pick, but we're watching Adventures in Babysitting, my second favorite Thor movie. And it's a great film. We've never seen it. Elizabeth Shue classic from the 80s. And yes, there is a character named Thor. And yes, he does have a hammer and long blonde hair. And is played by a surprising actor. If you've never seen it, I'm not going to ruin it for you. So let's watch Adventures in Babysitting later this month, at the end of the month. That's something we do every month. You can watch it with us, your hosts, a movie of our choosing. So yeah, go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Of course, watching Elizabeth Shue navigate New York is not the only thing you can do to hang out with us. You can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. We've got a couple emails we're going to read at the top of the show here. You can go to our website, stormpodcast.com, for the latest on our calendar, everything that's going on with us. You can go to Twitter @stormpodcast. We've got a new social media manager, and she is crushing it. So check out all the delights that await you there. You can leave us a review. We like those. We got a bunch this week, and we really appreciate them. And also, if you are part of our Patreon Slack, you can live watch
Sorry, I got confused because of our schedule shift. Anyway, you can live watch the latest episode of Lost
in the Slack with us. Next Saturday, Dave will be hosting the episode The Substitute. Forgive my confusion. We just moved dates around. So I am on board now. So that is what is happening next Saturday. Dave will be hosting the live watch of The Substitute. It's a great episode. If you felt not so stellar about this episode, I really like The Substitute. So we will get into that next week. So let's hit some reviews and then some emails. So this first one comes from Sean 2006. So I'm a time travel Sean. Thank you. And this one I think is going to make Dave happy, maybe. Three Ooh. Great people to explore a jungle of mystery with, 5 stars. I'm hard pressed to find a single. Oh, nice stuff about me. Thank you. I'm hard pressed to find a single person that is better at deep diving into pieces of pop culture than Joanna Robinson. I've been following both her and Dave on other podcasts and Neil through FSR for years, but never listened to Storm of Spoilers because I was never a book reader. Lost was always one of my favorite shows, and I was ecstatic to hear that they'd be doing a rewatch, so I finally subscribed. I only recently starting my own rewatch. I've been binging the show and the pod back and forth for like a month now and about to start season 3. My only critique, still 5 stars, at this point is that it's hard to hear the Jack hate so often because he's my favorite character. That's mostly based on later season Jack. So while I understand where they're coming from, it's hard not to hear anyone defending him. Sean, it will get worse before it gets better. P.S. Locke may not be the only antagonist, but he certainly is one most of the time. Sorry, Joanna. So that's one person, Sean, who was on Dave's side. Okay.
I don't know. Our social media manager seems to be on my side.
Oh, that's true. Oh, no. Okay. And we all know how persuasive social media can be. Okay.
It's almost like I infected them and I'm slowly moving towards their heart.
Slowly spreading towards their heart. All right. This review comes from Luane, 5 stars, 3 friends. I believe that is a blank check reference, but there are 3 of us. 3 friends. I first discovered this podcast the day after Game of Thrones season 8 started. I immediately enjoyed the banter and friendship of Dave, Neil, and Joanna. I had to join the small council the same day. I was so excited when they decided to cover Lost. It was a show that I gave up on during its first run. I started watching 1 episode a week with each podcast, then I had to binge the finale. I still watch the weekly episodes to go with the podcast, as I'm old and forget most things anyway. So if you like Lost and a fun community, this is the place. I can't wait to hear what we do next. And then lastly, thank you for that so much. And then lastly, 5 stars. This is a Canadian review, but I'm not going to do a Canadian accent. But anyway, thanks. 5 stars. When Lost premiered in 2004, I was 11 years old. All right. I remember watching.
Everyone's 11 some year, really, if we're just thinking about it.
I remember watching the show every Wednesday with my parents all the way through high school. I remember, as a kid, being unable to sleep for so many nights because my mind was racing, wondering what the heck was going on with the island. Rewatching and listening along with the storm now brings back so many great memories. No show will ever captivate me the way Lost did for so many years, and it's great to go back and remember it all. So yeah, so thanks for that, for those reviews. We really appreciate them. Keep them coming. Also, if you were having trouble getting the podcast on Apple Podcasts for a little while, that was an Apple error. It seems to be corrected, but we can't guarantee that there won't be future Apple errors because there's some stuff going on in the world of podcasting. So, you know, I don't advocate one podcatcher over another, but I'm just saying you might want to consider one that is not Apple, possibly, in the future. Okay, and then let me hit you with a couple emails. So this first email we have is like essentially this is a love letter to Dave, I consider it. So this is from Ryan, and Ryan writes, a little disappointed that we didn't connect the dots that Desmond caused the swan hole with the failsafe key. And since everyone blipped in time next to said Desmond caused hole, we now have confirmation of dry Hume holes. That's all, Ryan. So,
oh,
wow.
That did take a turn into me territory.
That's a gift for you. All right. And
so
then,
Ryan's saying that there's now confirmation of multiple different genre of Hume hole.
It's like wet ghosts and dry ghosts and wet Hume holes and dry Hume holes.
I'm glad we've elevated at this point.
We should probably look out for other wet dry phenomena on the island. All right. And then we've got this email from, I made James write this email. Because he was tweeting about it, and I was like, why don't you write an email about it, James? And so he did. So, okay. James says, remember Game of Thrones? Remember when you guys used to talk about Game of Thrones? Like a lot. Wasn't the whole idea of doing a Lost rewatch to ultimately compare the endings of the two shows? If memory serves, I think you initially talked about comparing both shows' finales and you would consider doing a final season compare and contrast or check-in or something along the way, a new corner perhaps? On the other hand, or Shark, I'm not necessarily sure I have to go back. My gut reaction so far is that I kind of think Lost is kicking Game of Thrones' ass, even with all the temple stuff. Anyway, thank you so much for a wonderful podcast. I truly appreciate you always being there for me in these difficult times. Don't fall down. Don't tighten up. James, P.S. Seriously, like a lot. Meaning we talked about Game of Thrones so much. We had considered maybe doing a Thrones rewatch after we finished this last season. But does it feel like we should, and I'm still not convinced that that's something we should do, but like, even though I think it was my idea, but should we be doing like an ongoing compare contrast?
I mean, it feels like it's something we could wait a little bit because there's a lot more Lost to go. And the final season of Game of Thrones is, as far as I can remember, only 3 episodes, but maybe 6, maybe as many as 6.
I was going to see if we're considering this a second episode, even though it's a third, but let's pretend it's a second episode. Then it's going up against the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And I'm sorry, in this one instance, Lost is going to lose. Maybe in the final 6.
Yeah.
Let's come back to this. But James is right that sort of we were inspired by the end of Game of Thrones to do this re-exam and not wanting Dave to quit the podcast to do this re-examination of Lost.
I think the final 6 will line up better because that's why they're really having to like wrap it up.
Oh my God. The bells and across the sea.
It'll be great.
Hilarious. Okay. So that is,
we'll be like, how do you contextualize a character by an entire, contextualization, or you just change them?
I mean, I will say this, since we're right here at the beginning of the final season of Lost, is that the level of hype for both shows was very similar, so like the level of expectations were extremely high, the level of engagement from the fandoms. So they sort of entered, these are two shows that entered their final seasons, one knowing that that was going to be the final season, and two with the fans sort of at sort of the height of their level of interest or engagement.
Well, kind of, because this is something that a couple times, right? But like the fact that Lost viewership,
right? In like season 3, they had a big drop.
So I would say if the finale were season 2, right, or something like that, that's Lost sort of at the zenith of its frenzy. But in terms, numbers at least. But I think the people who are sticking around, this is something that Joe brought up in one of our off-season episodes, I think. But I think the people who stuck around this long were like in it.
Right. So they would have been on whatever Reddit subreddit there would have been at the time. I think they were just like normal forums back in the day.
Yeah. Well, there was the Fuselage, which was like the main Lost forum. But then also like I was reading a whole bunch of reviews of this episode today.
Yeah.
they're all pretty much the same. But all of them had really active comment sections. Like remember when like, website had a comment section.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, so if Lost were trying to go during the Game of Thrones era, it would be like just all the theories are on like r/fishbiscuits, and that's it on Reddit.
All right, and then we have one last email. A bunch of people inspired by Kevin Gonzalez wrote in there like where they were for the final season. And most of these stories, those stories are kind of long. And so I need to go back through and sort of trim some of them down to be able to read them. So thank you so much for sending them in. I'm not ignoring them. I will get to them, but we've got one email from Jackie, that I do want to read, that is an origin story. But Jackie's a pretty active member of our live watch community, and so I just thought this part of her origin story was interesting. She's often in there on a Saturday with us. She says, First, I have to say how much I appreciate you folks doing this podcast, creating this community, participating in the live watches on our Slack channel is truly one of the highlights of my week. I first started watching Lost when it aired with my parents. Oh, no. With my parents, I was 11 years old, I believe.
Everyone's 11 years old at some point.
I believe we watched it up until the third season, and we all kind of drifted from it after a certain point. So I never watched the rest until much later. When I was in college, I realized Lost was on Netflix, and I spent many late nights working on project with it on in the background. Season 5 quickly became my favorite. Even though I watched Lost at least two separate times on Netflix during this time period, I have never watched the finale. I always heard terrible things about it, and I didn't want to ruin the way I felt about the show. So at this point, I have seen every single episode of Lost at least four times, except the finale. During this rewatch, I participate in the storm, but have little recollection of season 6 in general. I'm really excited to finally watch the finale with y'all and our little Slack family, and I'd like to thank you for giving me a reason to end the series and accept that it's over. Thanks again for all your hard work. All of the analysis is so enjoyable, and after all these years, you still bring up ideas and theories I had never thought of. You quickly become my favorite podcast host. I can't wait to see what y'all do next. Don't fall down, never tighten up. See y'all in the Slack. So I love this. We get to bring the finale to Jackie. I think that's really cool.
Help Jackie get some closure.
Yeah, it's on okay, the island Jackie. Of mystery.
It's great.
You can let go now. It's all right. I'm excited. So email us host@stormpodcast.com, your Hume hole theories, your where you were for the final season. I really promise to get to some of those next week. But until all of that, Neil, what happened on Lost this week?
Quite a few things happened on Lost this week. This episode, What Kate Does, was written by our friends and yours, Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, and directed by Paul Edwards. This episode aired on February 9th, 2010, and it takes place on day 6 following the arrival of Ajira Flight 316 on the island. On said island, everyone is a little rattled by the fact that Saeed came back from the dead, except for Sawyer. He is piecing out of this temple storyline. Kate and Jin, though, take off after him with a little others gang that includes Rob McElhaney and a very helpful Dharma, I'm going to call him a red shirt, named Justin. I don't think he dies in this episode, but he gets hit with rocks. That's pretty tough. Inside the temple, Dogen inspects and tortures our guy Saeed. And after explaining that Saeed is quote-unquote infected, the others ask Jack to convince him to take a pill of mystery. And instead of giving the pill to Saeed, Jack takes it himself and almost dies because the pill was, in fact, poison. Out in the jungle, Kate escapes the Dharma Bros and leaves Jin behind, then tracks Sawyer back to Dharmaville, where they have a very sad conversation at the docks, and Sawyer throws the engagement ring that he was going to give Juliet into the ocean. It's tough. Elsewhere, one might say in the sideways, Kate kidnaps Claire, steals a taxi, and then abandons Claire by the side of the road. And it isn't until after she gets her handcuffs removed that she realizes that this was a dick move and returns to Claire and drives her to the home of the couple that was supposed to adopt her baby. After that, couple basically bails on Claire because the husband left the wife, which is just a tough break. Kate takes Claire to the hospital because she's going into labor, and ultimately she is helped by Dr. Goodspeed, a.k.a. Ethan, a.k.a. Big Mapother Energy. Before they part ways, Claire helps Kate evade the cops one more time and gives her a credit card to aid in her escape. The whole thing ends back in the jungle, where Jin is almost recaptured by the others, then he gets his foot caught in a bear trap, and then is finally rescued by Feral Claire. Fun fact about this episode, fun fact about that final shot, this is the first on-island appearance in the original timeline by Claire since Cabin Fever, which was season 4, episode 11. So this is the first time we've seen Claire on the island in the main timeline since she just was sitting there being weird in the cabin. So she's having a totally normal one.
How did she get to that cabin? She just wandered off one night.
Yep,
just
left a baby on a leaf. Yep. It's fine.
This week's calm question, where we'll start, I have a hypothetical for you. We meet in Los Angeles in The Flash Sideways, the wife of the couple that was supposed to adopt Claire's baby but didn't. We never get to meet the husband, so I think this is a fun place for us to do some speculating. And the question is, what 2010 era television actor would you like to have seen guest star as the husband of the couple that bails on Claire? I will go first. I'm going to take the easiest one off the board. This is probably the best place to put Bryan Cranston into Lost, which would really seal up his early 2010s dominance. So I'm taking Cranston, but I'm curious to hear what you guys say. Dave, what do you think?
I'm going to say you're going to reach into a fellow J.J. Abrams series, and you're going to reach into one with multiple dimensions even. And you're going to pull Joshua Jackson over.
No.
Pacey would never abandon pregnant Claire. Never.
I mean, it's he would be playing a character on a television show.
Okay. All right,
I guess so.
Charlie would never. Okay. All right. For a second, I was really worried Dave had mine. I will take a journey over to a little FX series called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Ooh. And pluck Glenn Howerton out of the cast.
You were afraid I was going to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. To do a double Sunny. Double Sunny. And why not? Let's put Caitlin Olsen and Charlie Day in the hospital somewhere. Just have the full Sunny, Always Sunny cast.
And Danny DeVito, just like
as Aaron the baby on the sonogram.
The gang adopts a baby.
Why couldn't Danny DeVito be the cab driver? I think that would have been fun.
Ooh, yeah. I love
no
that.
Offense to the guy who plays the cab driver, but you know, Danny DeVito would have been an upgrade.
We're definitely not replacing the guy who plays the mechanic, because that's right. I believe it's Jeff Kober, I believe is his name. He is a veteran TV character actor. The Buffy fans know him from playing not one but two villains on Buffy. a villain so nice they brought him back to be like a big bad later on. Jeff Kober, big fan.
Yep, crushes it.
All right, so last week I offered this to Neil, so this week Joanna, do you want to start on the island or do you want to start in the Sideways?
Start and stay somewhere. Well, let's do the Sideways.
Okay. Well, it is a Kate episode, so sticking with the Kate centric storyline. Yeah. Not that there isn't Kate also on the island, but seems like a good place. Here we are once again, Lost trying to do a Kate episode. Pros, they seem to have learned from previous Kate episodes what we like to see in a Kate episode. Because
have they?
I mean, or guess what we don't want to see in a Kate episode?
So, Nathan Fillion.
We don't want to see a romance. we do want to see Kate run. And right. Then we'd like to see her, you know, have like charming adventures while running. I feel like that's fine. They kind of like, she's not like robbing banks to get toys out of safe deposit boxes anymore. Like, so they don't have to twist themselves into those pretzel nuts.
We like to see Kate have a crisis of conscience like halfway through the episode and then do something good.
Yeah.
You know, like when she pulls the little orca out of the bag and she's like, oh, shit, I am such an asshole.
I gotta go back and pick that person up in my stolen taxi.
Yeah, because it ends with her making friends.
Okay, let's talk about something really quickly. Kate is theoretically pretty good at running. Like, she's pretty good at it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Here's what you don't do. Stay in the stolen taxi that you took from the airport. Also, I don't know how she went back and found Claire without GPS or a cell phone in those. Like, she's like, oh, yes, I have such a familiarity with Los Angeles. I remember exactly which random corner I dropped that girl on, you know. So,
yeah. Or maybe Claire's, she didn't like, go very far
somewhere. It's like, oh, I also know where that is.
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine a scenario, though, where Kate, like, drops Claire off and then goes like right around the corner and finds that guy. So it wasn't hard because it wasn't that far away. She's like, what's this pregnant lady going to do? Run after me?
She just like reversed two blocks. Maybe in this flash sideways, Kate is a taxi driver.
Sure.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Because wild things happen in these sideways. We should say something. I want to say something that they were really hammering in all the recaps at the time, which is something that Damon and Carlton were really hammering at the time, which is that this is not, this isn't Sliding Doors. This isn't What If. This isn't like whatever. This is whatever this is. It's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's something that they really wanted to make sure people understood.
Yeah, like this isn't all of somebody's dream.
The finale, we pull out of a snow globe.
Not a dream, not a hoax, not an imaginary tale.
It's not like Vincent is dreaming somewhere.
Vincent dreams an alternate reality.
They also didn't like the word. They didn't like the word alternate. They didn't like people using the word alternate because it implied some sort of like it's not real. But they're like, this is real. So, I mean, we can use the word alternate. Damon and Carlton are not going to come after us in 2021. I dare them. But, you know, just to give that context to folks who are watching for the first time, that was something that they were talking about a lot. So,
Yeah, these things have consequences that are happening because they are happening to these characters. And we should treat that equally.
Do you know what I really love in a Kate episode?
What is that?
Jaunty horns of danger.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some of those taxi escape from the airport. The Giacchino horns were so jaunty. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, and we got a little bit more arts, like, you know, just in case we didn't get enough last week with LAX. LAX.
They wanted to get their money's worth bringing some of these other character actors back.
Yeah. Arts is like, he's like, guys, all I've ever wanted to do is Midnight Cowboy. Will you let me do Midnight Cowboy?
Can I do I'm walking here when the cab like taps like, me a little bit?
I let you blow me up with a stick of dynamite in a previous season. I'm doing Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
He manages to, you know, be in the episode even though Frogert seemed to be like a one-off. So we're getting people departing from the airport. We're getting further into LA. And most importantly, we get a little bit more focus on Claire. And at Joanna, as you pointed out previously in the calm, they've been sort of like bumping Kate's story from just I have to run to this thing that she expresses very directly to Sawyer in this episode, where like I have to make things right with Claire, having, you know, raised Aaron for 3 years. So here I think it's fun to play out the same dynamics, and so that's, you know, keeping us motivated watching this sideways decision. But we also get a little bit more with Claire getting to LA, which of course she never actually got to, or she never got to in the reality that we were living in up until now. So I guess my question is, in terms of assumptions we could be made, Kate definitely still accused of murder, definitely still good at running. Are we to assume that if Claire had ever gotten to LA in the original timeline, that the adoptive parents also would have probably left her with Aaron?
I'm not sure we can make that conclusion given how much is hinky about what we're watching. Like, you know, the fact that Ethan is at the hospital here and stuff like that. But that was something that I saw in a bunch of recaps at the time where they were like, well, finally we know what would have happened if Claire had taken her baby to LA. So that seemed to be like a conclusion folks were drawing. And it felt like something of a nothing burger. So I suppose I didn't remember this, but I suppose there were a lot of theories about who the couple was that like Claire was going to leave Aaron with. And it was, you know, like, would they be somehow connected?
It was Lance Reddick.
but yeah, it was just this random sad white lady. So maybe I would say we don't know for certain.
But yeah. I mean, I would say that given the way things went for Claire and sort of like her emotional state on the island, it always felt to me in that original, like, you know, season one, season two timeline, that Claire was never fully sure that she was going to give the baby away anyway. So I think in my head canon, if Flight 815 had landed the first time, or, you know, originally, there's a chance Claire backs out of it. Like, yeah, she's the one who backs out of it, not what happens here in the sideways. So
I guess second to this question, and but still based on assumptions, because I think it's interesting that the show is having this conversation with its fan base where it's like, you know, certain things happen, but then also they're either going to tell us certain things did or did not happen. So my question is when Kate tells Claire in the hospital, would you believe I didn't do it, or that I'm innocent, in this flash sideways, did she not blow up her father in the house? Is that a possibility?
I mean,
absolutely, it's a possibility.
Sure.
If Hurley's the luckiest man in the world,
yeah,
you know, maybe Kate's not a killer. And I don't like to think of her as a killer anyway, but, you know, maybe Kate didn't kill that one time.
Yeah.
Two times, if you can.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe she wasn't even responsible for that other guy.
Yeah.
Her friend.
Maybe he's waiting for her in yeah. Iowa.
She has somewhere to run to in this timeline.
Ooh, what?
Maybe. Something I wanted to say, you know, Dave is always fond of asking, like, how does the flashback or the flash forward relate to the On Island storyline, right? And two options for this, like, flash sideways situation. One is it helps us see how far a character has progressed, right? Like, if we see them in their season, you know, in their pre-season one, or, you know, around season one vibe, like that Kate, who, yes, ultimately does the right thing, but like initially hops in the cab, like Kate now wouldn't, I don't think she would hop in the cab and draw a gun on Claire at all. I don't think she would, you know, mm-hmm. maybe. I don't think so. I think we're supposed to like, think about the progress is the word I want. I mean, I guess that comes up mostly with characters like Sun and Jin, you know, when we were like, ugh, season one, Jin, great. Mm-hmm. You know, but like, think about what Kate was and think about what Kate is now. And if you don't see a lot of movement there, that I think is because the show has done not a great job of writing Kate overall in general. But we'll talk about that more. Does that make sense? But there's the pleasure of that old school flash to something else, like when Kate and on the island says, I can be very persuasive if I want to be, and then we flash to her in the mechanic shop, you know what I mean, like doing exactly that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
meeting the nicest mechanic who just doesn't want to get involved with the stuff.
Well, he's nice, but he's also like cool. Like I feel like this isn't the first pair of handcuffs. This obviously isn't the first pair of handcuffs he's taken off
personally. Yeah, he's on team ACAB for sure.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to get involved. It seems like
if you're going to be a woman in handcuffs driving a stolen taxi into a random mechanic shop, she really lucked out.
Oh, she found the perfect one. Yeah, she did. Two blocks away from Claire.
Two blocks away from Claire. Did I miss any Patsy Cline in this episode?
No Patsy Cline, but she does give the name of Joan Hart at the hospital, which is a favorite Kate alias, so that's fun.
Good job, Kate. Still got some stuff going. All right, so Claire goes into labor. It is early. We meet Dr. Ethan Goodspeed, who is doesn't have his anagrammed name, and instead seems to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm. He seems nice, but still don't entirely trust him.
Nope,
because he's just got that face.
Yep. And that neck, like 3 extra inches of neck, and I just get out of here, you menacing giraffe.
If there's an island under the water, he was still technically born on the island, right? Because we saw a Dharma shark. So if this was what we assume like a reality that we gained access into when Juliet hit the bomb, then is it possible that this dude still was like, saw a nuclear explosion, or is this the island has nothing to do with the Goodspeeds Horace lived up in Oregon and everything was fine.
But if Horace never goes to the island, he doesn't meet, you know, what's her name with the curly hair? Mm-hmm. Stays with Samantha Mathis. So I think he does go to the island to. Yeah.
They just, I guess, got DNA. Evacuated.
Yeah.
All right. So a pre-sunken island, Ethan survived a nuclear blast and grew up to be a doctor, and it's fine.
Well, I imagine he was evacuated with all the other kiddos.
With Charlotte and baby Miles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They evacuated the children.
Mm-hmm.
That's Do you think? I guess I assumed Horace would just be bad at that.
Amy.
Too.
Her name's
That's
Amy.
Right. So I guess Horace is at the bottom of the ocean, which is exactly where we want him to be.
Uh-huh. But Amy raised Ethan as a single mom in Oregon, raised Ethan, put him through medical school, and now he has made sure that she is living in comfort.
Lived right next door to Miles's Miles and his mom.
Love this for them.
Yeah, this Northwest survivors of the island.
And at no point the show. Did Ethan break all of the bones in anyone's body.
In anyone's body, no.
Which I think is
such restraint.
Yeah, it's a real upgrade.
He's never strung up a member of Drive Shaft in the jungle. So it's interesting because I think you're right. I don't think this is a very good episode of Lost. I think this is a not very good episode of Lost with one very, 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 very good scene. That's how I feel about this episode. Mm-hmm. And the question of like, how do you solve a problem with like Kate, or how did Lost let Kate down? That's a big question. I think that we can either try to address here or keep trying to address. Howevskis, I do agree with Dave that like a lesson that they learn. I think my favorite Kate Flash Anywhere episode is the one with Kim Dickens. And so if you're going to do like girl gang episode, like having Kate be defensive of Claire, like Claire goes in the hospital and Kate like storms out of the room and like grabs Ethan from the hallway because she's like defensive, and have Claire be protective of Kate when the cops come. Like all of that stuff I think is generally good. I just think Kate episodes are tough because just the show, well, I don't know. I'll be interested in your opinions. And I also just think I'm so glad to have Claire back, but I'm going to say this and I feel a little bad saying it, but I'm just going to say it. I don't think Emily DeRaven is a great actress. And so like the moment where it's like requiring her to freak out about whether Aaron is okay or not in the hospital, I think that's an actively bad scene. There's some stuff that Emily does well. Like there's been some cute peanut butter based stuff, but like, overall,
it seems like she would have been good on something slightly bigger emotionally, like your like a CW show or some such. Like, because every once in a while she gives like a like when she's deciding to come back into the cab, she has like some okay television face acting.
Yeah,
I'm with it, but it's like the depth isn't there to go from cab thing to worrying about baby to calmly lying to the police to appearing in a feral state all in one episode.
Yeah.
I guess what I wonder is, you know, did they, the scene in the hospital, was that shot before or after they had her try on her on island wig? Because
would she like fuck this show?
If you're thinking, if there's anything that's going to take the wind out of your sails as an actor, it's having to wear what I think, and we've been tracking worst wigs. But this has to be the one, right?
This is the number one.
Number one worst wig on the entire show is Claire's on island feral wig.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I think Emily DeRaven is perfectly capable as an actress. This is just not her best. It's not her best moment on Lost, and probably definitely not her best performance of her career for sure. And, you know, I think, I don't know, Claire ends up sort of existing in the background a little bit of this episode because the camera is very focused on what Kate is doing and, like, the looks that Kate is giving all of these different people. And we're trying to, like, figure out, you know, where this is going to go. And so, yeah, I think I think
maybe that's it. Maybe why I don't like this episode is because we spend a lot of time with characters in a state where I know how they would react, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Kate being defensive of pregnant Claire is great, but pregnant Claire is like the only version of Claire that they really knew anything to do with, and so yeah. It's all repeat beats.
Yep.
On the pregnant Claire side.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finally get Claire, you know, at the end of this episode, but that's we've had a whole episode where we're seeing repeat beats from Claire and Kate.
Yeah. And like, I think, yes,
great to see them back together, but neither of them learns a new lesson. They relearn lessons we've seen them learn before.
Right. And I think we'll see things diverge a bit more as it goes on. And I will say that two episodes from now is one of my very favorite episodes of Lost, and like specifically because of a wide divergence. And so I think that once again, it's just a fucking whiffed opportunity with Kate, because they're like, we don't know how to do something interesting and new for her, because we've just never known. I mean, I still go back to something that I believe it was Emily Vandervoof who said, like on the finale special where we talked about Kate, where she was like, Kate is a J.J. Abrams character trapped in a Damon Lindelof show. And it's like, true. It's like, she's such a fucking classic J.J. Abrams character. But she's not someone that Damon knows what to do with. And he wasn't able to transform her into someone that he knows what to do with. And so then she just is there tagging along after Jack or after Sawyer. And at least now they've given her a third option, which is the search for Claire. Do you know what I mean? But it's still not great. When we were live watching LAX part one and two, our Slack was very harsh on Kate, and I got very defensive of Kate, because like, I think in that sort of knee jerk, people didn't like Kate episodes at the time. And so 10 years later, I want to be like protective of women who people like dismissed or maligned or whatever at the time. Cause I'm like, let's think about it through the lens of 2021 and like, let's find better angles on Kate. But I'm just like, it just wasn't there in the show, and it's not Evangeline Lilly's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot I love about Kate, but the show just, I didn't know what to do with her. That's what I think. So.
Yeah. And she does a lot in this episode in terms of things she learns and watches other people do, but it's all reaction stuff, and it feels weird. Even the proactive cuff getting off turns into like a reactive scene. It's a odd writing and positioning for Kate, but she does get to be the first person to have a flashback, a flash forward, and a flash sideways episode that are all Kate centric. So congratulations, Kate. You win the award.
Shout out to the record holder, Kate.
I think that's the interesting push-pull of Kate, is that even though Lost never knew what to do with her, Damon knew she was, like, she was originally supposed to be the lead of the show before, like, Jack stuck. So Damon, like, I'm going to leave Carlson out of it. Damon, like, knows that he needs to use Kate in an homage to what the show originally was. So we have so many Kate episodes because of that, without an idea of what to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I guess this is a good place to transition to the island, because this show on the island keeps like two points of view. It keeps Kate, who runs off after Sawyer, and it keeps Jack. And those are the leads, and they're the people who are going to get a bunch of lead episodes, but they're also the people who, because we return to them as point of view characters so often, even when they're not the people doing interesting things, I think it's tougher to write them consistently. Because like, it's not that they don't have good arcs. It's that their good arcs aren't always timed with when it's time to have a season premiere Jack episode or a second episode Kate episode.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not always when those characters are peaking. They're usually peaking towards the end of the season, and we're, you know, stuck in a, like a Ben, you know, revealing something important to the episode while Kate's doing the action that we want her to.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a phrase that I think comes from initially from Dan Harmon. The phrase is arc out, which means when you run out of gas on a, you've done the story, right? And so I think we use Charlie as a good example of that. Like, they arced out on Charlie really early, and what they wound up doing eventually, but still later than they should have, is give Charlie a goodbye. And it's a great goodbye. And like, Charlie is forever remembered positively in the show because his exit is so spectacular. Or at least remembered, you know, memorably on the show because his exit is so spectacular. But like, is Kate a character who arced out, or she was just never given an arc at all? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what happened, but that's a phrase I'm going to use all the time now, which is arced out. Character is arced out. There's no gas left in the tank.
I will say this in defense of Kate, is that the Kate stuff that works, it works primarily because Evangeline Lilly has just really good chemistry with some of her co-stars. And it works because sort of...
Possibly everybody?
Possibly everybody. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is like, you can imagine being in a writer's room and knowing that you have Evangeline Lilly, who can sort of work with every different character that we have in play, and knowing that she's sort of important to the story. And yeah, that's why they keep coming back to the Kate episodes. But you know, sometimes they're a little clunky.
Speaking of unexpected chemistry, we have Aldo returning to harass Evangeline Lilly.
I thought you were talking about the poison pill. Sure.
Oh, that would have been better, like literal chemistry. Uh-huh. No, I was just like Evangeline Lilly makes like those scenes work. Even I mean, it's a whole bunch of charismatic actors, it seems like. Yeah, even the guy who plays who's the other guy?
Justin.
So, and
he says some strange stuff.
He does say some strange stuff.
We should discuss some of the weird stuff that this dude is talking about, right? Mm-hmm.
There seem to be secrets and hierarchies abound in the others. Like, I guess we should have expected this.
Sure.
They are just a different version of the others. But,
others be lying all the time for some reason. They're always withholding information or lying about information. They spent too much time with Ben over the years.
The only thing he's like willing to disclose is that they are protecting them from the smoke monster in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
The black smoke that gets all pissed off. But he's not going to...
A great line for Rob McElhenney, right? Like, that makes a ticka-ticka noise.
Right. He didn't get the noise right. It's clickety-clack, I believe, is the preferred way to describe that.
But he isn't going to tell Jin about the Ajira flight... I don't know why. I'm assuming that they're aware the others were previously aware that Widmore was coming. Like, presumably the others have a network of knowing when things are coming to the island. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was Jacob related or whatnot, but they've managed to know that the Ajira flight came and managed to come with the means, apparently, mm-hmm. for this like evil to also negotiate the island. That was the only thing I could think about.
They also, I guess, if they know, how much do we think the others know about the man in black at this point? And like his whole deal? Because if they have an inkling that Sun is with the group, you know, which is true, Sun is with the gang that's with the man in black, then they wouldn't want Jin to go running off to basically add another person to the Man in Black's, you know, potential people he could persuade to attack.
But also, I mean, like, yeah. But also, like, I don't know that we should take Aldo as the benchmark for what the general others would or would not share, because he has a vendetta against Kate for conking him on the head.
For just like one small incident. Like, not one, even...
A minor concussion.
He doesn't even have a scar from where she hit him.
But it was so funny because I was rewatching... I mean, I've seen this episode a bunch of times, but I was rewatching it and I was like, God, this... Like, okay, take 20% off the top with the mansplaining of the, like, of everything and the eye rolling about Kate and stuff like that. He's being such an asshole. And then he was like, hi, here's why I'm being an asshole to you. I was like, oh, okay, well, fair enough. At least he has some motivation there.
Yeah, I mean, that's easier to understand than, like, Dogen and his guy, John Lennon. Hawks, with the IKEA bookshelf, and like
can't
they're
steal
very
my joke like that.
Sorry.
It's just the moment of the episode that like makes my head explode. Is it's like cut to, okay, not only is Lennon sitting next to absolutely 100% the Billy bookcase from IKEA. Look it up. That's exactly what that is, with the particle board and the pegs. That's what that is. Secondly, he's just standing there reading. Like no,
very casual. Okay?
The smoke monster, like Jacob's dead. Smoke monster's loose on the island or something. You've got a circle of ash around you. Crazy things are happening. You're not just casually reading by the Billy bookcase.
Saeed just woke up from the dead.
You better be researching. And if you're researching, I know what that looks like on Buffy. And it means like 10 leather-bound tomes in front of you as you frantically flip pages. That's what research looks like. None of this casual lean and peruse, Lennon. No, no. So
he's like, we'll figure it out when we figure it out. It's no big deal. No rush yet. Everybody's chilling.
I mean, he's the resident other who's out of the book club, apparently.
Temple aggravations.
So what's going on in the temple? Neil, explain to me what's going on in the temple.
Well, as I said earlier, the others very big on withholding information. Although I kind of like that they sprinkle, you know, the truth in there for the audience. Like they're basically just withholding the information from Jack and Saeed and the gang. But like we know that they tortured Saeed to do some sort of test, because we need another parallel to season one. And whatever the test was, Saeed failed. And because of that, they're going to try and, I guess, put Saeed down with some poison. What they didn't expect was the stubbornness of Jack Shepard. And the fact that Jack turns back into a doctor all of a sudden and is like, you got to tell me the ingredients. What I don't understand is why they didn't just tell Jack just some nonsense ingredients. Be like, oh, it's
herbs.
It's special herbs and spices.
It's acetaminophen.
Right. Like, it's just Tylenol, bud. But
penicillin.
So whatever that test was, Saeed failed so hard that they're like, we gotta kill this guy now.
But like, what? Okay, temple. Again, we're not gonna spend much more time here. So like, I promise this won't be every week me bitching about the temple. But like, okay, Saeed fails the test. They're like, this guy's gotta go, right? Because there's a darkness spreading. It's headed to his heart. Let's get rid of him. Let's make a packet of powder and give it to Jack.
We have him strapped to a table, but wait. Let's unstrap
him. You know, they could have just said, oh, your friend died on the table in here as well. I don't know what happened. Oh.
He was dead, and he was alive, and he was dead again. That's just the cycle of Jacob.
Never mind. I figured out why. Okay.
Well, there is.
I can't talk about it here, but okay.
There is the line where Dogen's like, he has to take it willingly. So
yeah,
I wonder
but what
if
kind
it's
of
like
poison
a
only works if you have to take it willingly.
Right?
Does it?
They're like, what kind of poison is that?
Yeah.
It's a we'll magic poison story. Made with special herbs that you burn to make ash circles to protect you from smoke monsters.
Sure.
I think Island of Mystery does way too much lifting here at the beginning of season six. Because two episodes in, and we have two big questions about the temple, and instead of like stopping and maybe addressing the previous episode's question, which it seems like when this episode starts, like Saeed's back from the dead, let's figure out what happened. I'm like, great, I would also like to know what happened. Perhaps some things will be shared. No, because Saeed's back from the dead in a way that like no one's really expected, that also involves like another type of test, that because Dogen decides he doesn't want to describe in any accurate way. And then because he doesn't like the taste of English in his mouth, we keep getting the closest translation is from Lennon, which is just so vague. It's just so many weird mysteries piled on top of a show where I had questions already and none of them were about this. It's like, it seems odd. And then not like, also a lot of my questions are about your major villain who isn't even appearing in this episode.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, does it frustrate you that Ben and Locke aren't in this episode?
Absolutely.
And does it feel like a filler because of that? And, like, I have an answer for that that isn't an automatic yes. But I will say that, like, it definitely tips towards filler territory when you don't have Locke having just revealed everything that's going on. Like, you don't have Locke here. I want to go back to the infected, unclean, whatever. So while I was watching the episode this latest time, I pulled up the transcript. This was on Lostpedia, so I could read the Japanese that is untranslated. You know, and the word that Dogen used to describe Saeed, and the reason, by the way, I mean, I'm just going to say this, like, oftentimes, usually I hear this character referred to as Dogen, but, like, in this episode, he refers to himself as Dogen. So, like, or Lennon refers to him as Dogen or whatever. So we're going to use that pronunciation. He used the word, I think it's pronounced Kegare, but I could be wrong. Which means uncleanness, defilement, and it's the Japanese term for a state of pollution and defilement, important particularly in Shinto as a religious term. Typical causes of kegare are the contact with any form of death, childbirth, disease, and menstruation. Great. In Shinto, kegare is a form of taboo violation, which needs to somehow be remedied by the person responsible. This condition became remedied through purification rites. Kegare can have an adverse impact not only on the person directly affected, but also to the community he or she belongs to. So, like, when they say the infection will spread, like, one interpretation is, like, it will spread throughout Saeed to his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And another interpretation is, like, it will spread amongst the people around Saeed. Do you know what I mean? Like, is this infection infectious? Sort of thing. So yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
I don't love any of those options for Saeed. He deserves better than all of
us. We love Saeed.
He should not be, like, infected. He's very
good. Well, and for Claire, because we're told it happened to Jack's sister afterwards, and that sort of leads to the reveal of Claire. And she's been on the island for 3 years setting up Rousseau Trap. There's like a spirit of Rousseau season one over this episode, which is interesting because I would have, like, maybe had some Locke and Ben and do some, like, season six gooping or something, but, like, instead it's a Rousseau episode and a Kate episode, which, whatever. We get Saeed being tortured, we get the forest traps, we get the sort of idea of infection, which Rousseau was always talking about, where now maybe we're thinking this has always been, like, a spiritual infection. This hasn't been, like, necessarily the type of infection that we've been talking about. Doesn't make sense with a lot of stuff she was talking about vaccinating children before, but that was also sort of a Claire-ish plot line, so I guess you could connect it to season one that way. Seems loose.
Yeah, I mean, we will get, so, like, you know, we should say, if it's not obvious, they're doing not only a lot of allusions with, like, Ethan and the baby and Rousseau and stuff like that to season one, but they're also kind of trying to pattern the centric episodes, right? So, like, we get the two-parter, which is Jack and Plane centric, but also everyone centric, right? And then we get a Kate episode, and that's how season one started. But there's, as Neil mentioned, well, anyway, there's fewer episodes in this season than there are in season one of Lost, so it's not going to be a one-to-one. And spoiler alert, there are some centric episodes of characters that weren't in season one of Lost. So you get some, you know, there's two Saeed episodes in season one, and there is a Saeed episode in this final season, but some of his season one episode is also jammed into this Kate episode, right? Like, Solitary is sort of mashed up with the first Kate episode to get, and the Claire kidnapped by Ethan episode, raised by another, right? Is all sort of mashed together to give us this. And it doesn't really work that well.
Well, while you're mashing things up, Joanna, where does Love Learn Sawyer come from?
I don't have a good source for that, really, right? Like, this is new. But okay, so this is why maybe this isn't a filler episode. I do think that the dock scene is one of the finest scenes of Lost ever. And Josh Holloway is like the Josh Holloway Emmy train rolls on, as far as I'm concerned, in his performance in that scene. And also Evangeline Lilly is really good, reactive, but good in that scene. Right. But what this episode does is give even more breathing room on Sawyer's devastation over Juliet. And I think that too often on Lost, characters die and the people who cared about them don't really sit in that grief for very long, because we're on to the next life imperiling adventure. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I like that this gives us time to really soak in the loss of Juliet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that not only is this, does this sequence work? I think it's definitely the best sequence in the entire episode, which is
bar none. Yeah.
Kate, even some of the stuff where like Kate first shows up at Dharmaville, it's like, ooh, we're back in Dharmaville. Interesting.
Yeah.
What's happening here? And then basically the full interaction with Sawyer is great. And I like the reveal from Kate that like ultimately the reason why she followed Sawyer is, you know, to see if he's okay, but also that she is refocusing her mission on finding Claire and trying to return Claire to her child, which is sort of Kate's ultimate, in her mind, how she will redeem all of the terrible, awful things that have happened on the island.
Yeah, it's so complicated, because the thing that I do love about that dock scene and the scene in the barracks is I do think that Evangeline Lilly is quite good in both of those, and Josh Holloway is tremendous, but I think Kate's motivations are multifaceted, because I do think they're doing sort of the last gasp or one more time around the bend, like love triangle stuff, right? Because she gets that like a kind of tender goodbye with Jack, right? Mm-hmm. So it's Jack's like, remember, we have a connection, bye, as you run off after Sawyer again. And I do think that there are some elements in Kate of heartbreak over seeing just how much it was that Sawyer loved Juliet, not just because she's sad Juliet's dead, not just because she's sad that Sawyer is so upset, but because when he's like, it's really well shot when he's like, I was going to ask her to marry me, and you see the ring, and then you see Kate's face about the ring. And I think her reaction there is like, why was he ready to commit to her? And he was so shiesty about it with me. Like, what, you know, she, it's still there, that part of it, even though I do believe her about Claire.
Sure.
That other Sawyer stuff is still in there. And so she's having to she's embarrassed. She's embarrassed and heartbroken and all these other things about, like, you know, like when she sees him crying in the room they share with Juliet, she's like, fuck, I'm such an idiot. Like, why did I follow him, kind of? And like that great shot of them in the hallway where she's in the foreground and he's behind and she doesn't even turn around to look at him. She's just like looking off in the middle distance past the camera. And then like, and then Sawyer's incredible, incredible line of like, which time, when she's like, I'm sorry I followed you, and he says, which time? That just like bowls me over every time. So I think it's incredible, incredible stuff in the middle of a not very good episode. Dave, do you have any feelings about the Sawyer Kay stuff?
I would have cut it from the series entirely. Because I think its primary focus in the great performances, but its primary purpose in the episode is to close the love triangle door, and it's closed. It's closed by performance. Because I think that's the purpose of, like, he gives this whole speech, we love it, he throws the ring, he walks away, she cries, and I'm like, if she just like looked off in the distance misty-eyed, that's like a, I'm here to accept my friend. The cry is like, this love triangle's over. And I was like, oh, come on, guys. So I would cut it. That's where I would have made up my what's happening with lock time.
Don't weep for the love triangle.
You and I should, well, I mean, like, fuck the love triangle, but like, you and I should never work on anything together, because we have very different priorities.
Yes. Mine is much more focused on providing answers on the island of mystery. Mm.
I like the calmness.
Not in
it.
All things, but particularly here on this Lost podcast.
I mean, if you're going to do a filler episode, which, as we said, a lot of this episode feels like a fill, or what we would call like a transition episode. They're trying to transition us out of the sort of chaos of the premiere into what the longer story arcs will be for this season. Mm-hmm. I like the patience of giving Sawyer some room to breathe and, you know, involving Kate, and their chemistry is just too good. Like, you can see how it was hard to resist doing one more emotional doc talk.
I don't necessarily dislike it, but it's the most modular part of this episode. If you pop it out, everybody's still in the same places at the end.
Yeah, that's true. Not a lot of forward momentum here.
Just can't. Okay, anyway.
I mean, you could also pop out a lot of the Saeed stuff, but it seems like that's the focus.
Pop
so
the entire temple.
Yeah, that's kind of at the bottom of our very ugly Jenga pile of like pieces. And that's really sort of what it like feels like. Like, they're doing these callbacks, you know, it's like, it's kind of like season one, but then we also want to like have this new mystery and these new threats, and we need like new characters because we're a television show in another season. And that's what happens with us. We bring in new characters and it's all mixing, and I really like parts of it, but all together, it's underwhelming. Mm-hmm. It's like, I could spot the things and be like, oh, that's cool. But it doesn't feel like it has any consequence to anything else around it.
Oh, I just very much disagree, because I think in addition to plot Jenga, you have to have emotional Jenga. And I hear you that you say you feel like you got it already. You didn't need those scenes to really get it. But I just think the emotion is where Lost really does its best living. So, but that's
maybe.
I think we just enjoy the show for two different reasons. And I think
I asked
okay.
Neil to explain it, so now I'm going to ask you to explain it. What's happening with Jack in the temple emotionally?
I'm so happy you asked me, because this is exactly where I wanted to go next. I want to check in on the Jack redemption arc. Is it going to stick this time? And we get a little two steps forward, two steps back in this episode where Jack does a little like, you're not taking side, I'm gonna come with, you know, like sort of classic Jack stuff. But when he goes in to talk to Dogen and he says, you know, Dogen gives him the whole like, and how many people have died or been injured or whatever in service of your bullshit, Jack? And Jack's like, a lot. It reminds me of, you know, Jack last week saying, immediately, this is my fault with Saeed, right? Mm-hmm. This is my fault. So he's saying that again. And then he says this great thing where he goes, I don't trust myself. How can I trust you? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not the Jack we know. That's a different Jack to me. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree. I think that the really good stuff that we saw in the first episode of this season, which we talked about last week, between Jack and Sawyer, and Jack's very immediate realization that like he was so sure that was going to work, the bomb thing.
Yeah.
And he had finally crossed over from, you know, the man of science to the man of full faith, although it was still faith in a bomb. And so it really does feel like there is some difference to Jack. Like he is, and it's kind of easier to pull off in this scenario because, you know, it makes sense that Jack is very protective of his people, the people from Flight 815, against this mysterious group of others who have been hiding in a temple for five seasons. And so I think you get a lot of really good sort of little character growth for Jack, realizing that, you know, he maybe doesn't have as good of a handle on this whole situation as he thought, you know?
Yeah. And the thing that I like, and he says, you know, he says to Saeed, I didn't fix you. They did, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jack saying, it was beyond me. I couldn't fix you. But that Jack has that conversation with Saeed, which I also actually really like in the middle of a stupid plot that I don't like.
Well, if I was going to cut anything from the episode.
Yeah.
No, great. Go ahead.
They have a conversation. They do what Dave always wants characters to do, which is talk to each other, right?
Yes.
So they talk to each other. And I think it's really good. And Saeed says, I trust you, Jack. Like, I'll do what you say because I trust you. And Jack's like, cool story. I don't trust me. So Juliet's dead. So
it's too late for that, Saeed.
Juliet trusted me too. Like, okay. So, you know, so, and then he goes back in and he talks, and then he fucking takes the poison pill, which I love. Mm-hmm. I love that Jack did that. I think that was a great move. I don't know how you guys feel. That's how I feel about it. So.
Yeah.
No, I think it's all good Jack stuff because it also, the difference, I think, when he talks to Dogen the first time and then when he goes back, is sort of like the whole idea that Dogen uses the language barrier so he could enforce distant decisions on people is like the same goal that Jack wants in theory, right? You think you know best and you want to save everybody, but he sees how it works without the emotional connection, without the like live together part of the live together, die alone. Mm-hmm. So it's nice that like while we have Jack reckoning with his place in things, we were also given like a dark, distant Jack. And although he has like a soft performance, he's very mysterious and tried to poison Saeed. So I don't know if I'm necessarily on his side.
I also...
Who tried to poison Saeed?
Dogen did?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I also very much enjoy the pendulum swing back for Jack. Like, Jack is no longer taking things on faith. Like, he is not believing and he's not trusting anybody on this island anymore, except for, like, his, like, five friends that are left. And I think that makes Jack a more interesting character because he, you know, he's a little chaotic. So, like, the pill-taking thing is it's just a fantastic moment where it's like, oh, shit. You know, Chaos Jack is back and I love it.
I feel like John might have done that too. Sure. I feel like that's something John might have done.
OG, original John.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly.
All I know is that season six is really paying off at people getting punched in the throat. Like, we're really doing well.
Yeah.
And as a fan of that, I'm keeping track.
I also really love the line reading of like when Jack's like, what's that? And Dogen's just like, tea. And Jack's like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
of course.
Hurley has this great joke about, you know, asking Saeed if he's a zombie or whatever, right? And apparently that was like an inside podcast, Lost podcast joke.
Yes, the final season was going to be the zombie season.
Yeah, season seven was going to be the zombie season. So that was like a joke about that. But like, also, you know, is Saeed's giving us some, like, there was a classic Jesus pose last week as they pulled him out of the pool and his arms were sort of, you know, flung out, but also he's got that wound on his side. Like, that's a Jesus wound. Like, I feel like there's some definite Jesus imagery there. And then I just wanted to say that Naveen Andrews is doing something in his performance here where he's giving us Saeed, but like slightly different.
Would you say he came back wrong a little bit?
Not quite wolf brain wrong, but
I do.
He might have come back wrong.
I do love that, and you noticed this in the previously on for this episode, but that final moment from episode two where he asks, like, what happened, like, the British comes out of Naveen Andrews a little bit, and I find that to be interesting. There's a similar moment with Kate in this episode where her natural accent comes out a little bit, and it just takes you out of the moment for a second, but in a delightful way, I think.
Can we talk about a few looks that are in this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Like wet Saeed?
Oh, not like looks. I mean, like Miles gives Saeed a funky little look. The second funky little look in two episodes.
Yeah.
What are we supposed to make of
Miles
that?
Seems very confused about where Saeed went.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because,
and yeah,
like when he was quote unquote dead, because you know, we get that lingering camera shot when Saeed was first sort of pronounced dead of Miles, and we know what Miles can do. We saw it in full action with him helping Sawyer figure out Juliet's final words. So yeah, like I think that he does so much good work in the background just with the looks, kindling. So he's just
I think
great.
This is Miles realizing that Hurley isn't full of shit. Because when they had a conversation, he's like, that's not how it works. Like, the brain dies. I hear, like, the last brain thing. But now that he's, like, seeing somebody return, maybe Hurley's ghost talking isn't so weird.
Miles is now questioning how, like, death works or doesn't work.
I think it's more like, I don't know. I don't know. Watch that spot. Watch that spot, I guess. And then also in the flash sideways, Kate gets to funny little look moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number one would be seeing Jack briefly out the cab window as she leaves the airport. And it's not just a, hey, isn't that the guy I stole Ben from on the flight? Like, it's a funny little look, right? And then she gives a funny little look when Claire says Aaron. So, just clocking those funny little looks.
Yeah.
As they happen.
It was that child was meant to be named Aaron.
I guess so.
All right. Anything else before we get to corners?
Did we talk about this "he may be one of them" line that Aldo gives?
Oh, from this is, yes, another one of the things Aldo says that is a little confusing. Who are them?
Yeah.
And also, there just seems to be like a weird, I don't know. The others are sort of like, that they don't want Sawyer to leave. They need Sawyer to come back safely. Why are they trying to protect Sawyer if he wants to leave? Like, they're being very weird and withholding the reasons why about our Flight 815 losties. Like, there's just, because their name was on the list that was buried in the Ankh or whatever. It's very weird. What do they mean by them?
What did they mean by also, them? Also,
if they're trying to keep them safe, why did they let Kate and Jin go at all? Do they not know about the jungle?
One's a tracker, and then Jin something something.
Can I submit a Giacchino music cue that I came up with that Giacchino didn't use? It's for when we first see Claire in her feral state, and it would be called "Rousseau, you've lost your baby."
Rousseau, you've been out here way too long.
Rousseau, you don't have a hairbrush.
For 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, Rousseau, this, I guess, is another just thing that we should appreciate about Danielle Rousseau. She lived on this island for 16 years, and her hair looked great. Claire's been there for only a couple years, and it has gone horribly wrong.
Did not work out.
It's gone horribly wrong.
All right, that, I think, leads us into our real Giacchino corner. Neil, what do we have this week?
Well, there's a couple tracks from the soundtrack in this one. I think that the best one is called "My Orca," which is the sound cue when I believe it plays over Kate sifting through Claire's things.
If it doesn't play over that, what else does it play over?
That's what Dogen calls his baseball.
But it comes up 3 times in this episode. It's when Kate opens Claire's bag and pulls out the stuffed animal. It's also when they're talking about the adoptive parents and the scene where Claire gives Kate the credit card. So really, and what I really would have loved to see is, does Claire's credit card also have like orca whales on it? That would be fun. I didn't notice. I don't think so. But yes, "My Orca" is the Giacchino of the. And I love, if you go to Lostpedia, it shows the sheet music. And
is it shaped like an orca?
And this one is just at the top of the sheet music, it says what Kate does, and then in brackets, "with Claire." It's like, here's what Kate does with Claire.
Yeah,
it's orca related. Don't worry about it.
My orca.
My orca. Our jungle of mystery moment goes to Dogen, who says, because it happened to your sister. So whatever happened to Saeed is happening to, or has happened to, Claire. What is it? Who knows?
It's I don't a know.
Big jungle of mystery.
But if Saeed's hair gets bad, then we riot.
Oh, pistols at dawn.
The Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award. I'm going to call an audible. We're going to do 2 things here, and you guys get to pull it. We have Justin and the Boulder Trap. Kate, you know, manages to get the guy in front of Clara's boulder trap, and he goes down. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking earlier, this is typically something that goes for most vertical distance. So doesn't Sawyer's engagement ring technically win?
Oh, darn. I thought we were... Well...
I still think Justin gets it, and here's why. Because Justin, despite the fact that he's like partnered up with the most insufferable dude in the others group, Aldo, Justin seems pretty nice. Like, he is seems to want to spill a lot of information that both the audience and our characters want. We should have been listening to Justin. And he saves Kate from getting hit by the rocks, which, ironically, she then uses against him. So I would say that the falling down award, in its essence, is most often about someone who... It's very unfortunate that they fell down. And I feel for Justin. I think Justin deserved to... just somebody needed to just talk to him, and it would have been fine.
The engagement ring is back in the like whole Hot Pocket debate we had with Dim and Lindelof, which is whether the ring was thrown versus Justin falling down.
Well, as soon as gravity starts acting on it, which I believe is the Hot Pocket, we're going to give it to Justin.
Yeah. Well, it's he's thrown, and then it falls, and then it hits the ocean, then it falls down through the water into Mikhail's awaiting hands. Mm-hmm. And then he swims away with the Dharma shark.
And he says, "Darling, Dharma shark, will you marry me?"
Finally, our ring. All right, accent corner. We have an accent corner.
Sort of.
Oh, we do? Oh, okay. Yeah. She does. She hits it really hard. Neil, you say it.
Yeah, similar to Naveen Andrews' British accent coming out at the end of last week's episode, we get Evangeline Lilly's pronunciation of sorry. Which is very the most Canadian thing that she's ever said. And, you know, this another season one tie-in, we talked about how when they were filming the pilot of Lost, they had trouble, like they had a slight delay because they were trying to get Evangeline Lilly's paperwork done so that she could leave Canada and go to Hawaii and film. So the Canadian is still there, and it shows up in the most emotional scene of the episode. It's great. I love that it's there.
Our John Locke Memorial Coming Back Award goes to Dr. Ethan Goodspeed. You did it, buddy. You didn't become some sort of psychopath that we know about.
Mm-hmm. Slash plumber.
Slash plumber. Our only plumber doctor.
But that said, for all we know, like, just down the hallway in that hospital could be Scott Steve with casts all over, having had all of his bones broken by psycho Dr. Ethan Goodspeed.
That's the constant across all
like,
realities.
That would suck too. Like Scott Steve, he's on flight A-15. He lands, everything's great, and then Ethan just shows up and beats the shit out of him.
Just had a bad day at the doctor work.
Right.
Trained under Dr. Shepard, just taking out on someone else.
Some sort of Scott Steve related vendetta. Who knows?
Our Abs Eterno Award this week goes to Wet Saeed. So our Saeed parentheses wet. Mm-hmm. Wet Saeed, dry Saeed. Important distinction.
He gets his kid off twice.
Yeah.
Once to show off his side wound, and another to get tortured. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our Through the Looking Glass, this is a new corner. We're going to spotlight people taking looks in mirrors. This week, Kate, in our sideways, gazes into the body shop mirror before Majorca kicks in.
And to be clear, by body shop, I mean the mechanics, not, you know, the where you get your lotions and your soaps in the 90s. So.
Or you're not calling the hospital the body shop.
No.
It's Kate's... Kate standing there questioning whether leaving a pregnant woman without any a pregnant woman from another country without any money or luggage or anything on the side of the street in Los Angeles, whether or not that was a dick move. And the answer is yes, it was.
Speaking of, the Ben's talking, so it's obviously a lie award. This week goes to Kate, who says, "I didn't take any of your money," she says to Claire. She gives her stuff back, but did somehow manage to pay off the person at the body shop with $200, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Joanna, we feel pretty confident about this.
Listen, we don't see her pull it out of the purse, but like, I don't know where else Kate got $200. I mean, maybe she found it in the taxi cab, but like, you know, fugitives don't travel with folding cash as far as I know. Right. So.
And she takes the credit card at the end. So just like doubly, Kate's like, all right, I'm going to double dip on this pregnant lady. Spot the Difference Corner, another new corner. Based off of the Highlights magazine section, we have two things that are really happening to characters that we think we know, and some things we have to intuit. Some things are obviously different. This week, Ethan, he's very hesitant to stick pregnant women with needles against their will. Very hesitant.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of like last week, Hurley said he's the luckiest guy in the world. Just sort of like, hey, what's...
This is obviously going not on? What we know about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's not slight differences either, just like completely the opposite.
Yeah, it has to be like a big opposite. It's time for the Jungle of Kistery. The first Jungle of Kistery results from season 6, because we will put it up at Storm Podcast on Twitter on Saturdays after you live watch the episode and when the podcast goes up. But we're going to read the results here on the show for the previous week. Joanna, how did we do for LAX parts 1 and 2?
All right. So when we were talking about this in the live wash before we put up on Twitter, we basically admitted this is going to be a race for second place. So obviously, clearly coming in a thundering first place, it's good old, we can have coffee, we can go Dutch, James and Juliet. You know what I mean? So 65% of the vote, big time winners, obviously. No question. However, what is interesting is that all our three other options sort of tied, basically. I mean, 1% difference. Sawyer's Boot, Jack's Face, Lost Luggage, Jack and Locke, and Boone and Real Locke are all, you know, equally lesser than James and Juliet. Yeah.
I mean, it just goes to prove that even through a thick layer of theatrical blood, James and Juliet will always win Kistery, no matter what. I mean, they could douse both of them in blood next time, and they would still win.
A real Carrie situation.
All right, make sure to go check Storm Podcast on Twitter. As you're listening to this now, the poll for What Kate Does will be up, and we'll let you know the results next week. Our Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award goes to Aldo, who says, "Where are you going?" and then gets shot by Claire.
I feel like this is smugly in practice.
It does say smugly on the transcript. Where are you going?
They didn't need to give Rob Meckel any of that stage direction. He knows how to do it.
They did not. The Frank Lapidus Guess We're Not Going to Guam Act Break Award goes to Dogen, who says poison when Jack coughs up. "You finally want to tell me what's in that pill? It's poison. He's trying to kill Saeed. It's no good. We don't like it."
Would have been more fun if he would have just been like, "It's just green tea. Like, what's your problem?"
Green tea. Yeah. We'll be fine. The official podcast check-in. This season 6 podcasts have video podcasts that are mostly like from set or talking to characters. This one particular is Evangeline Lilly speaking about what it was like to play Kate in the Sideways, which you could check out. Lostpedia has links to all the videos if you wish. But there is a question asked of Damon and Carlton at the Comic-Con that aired with this episode, which is, are we going to know more about the numbers this season? And they say the numbers will be addressed this season. They very specifically do not say there will not be like an answer about what the numbers are, but the numbers are going to be addressed this season. Who knows? At this point, they're probably just on a weird temple device. Stay tuned.
Oh, I just remember. Okay. Sorry.
That reaction seems pretty worth it. But no spoilers, not here on the calm. We're going to save that for the storm right after this.
Now is the time on this podcast where we like to thank our subscribers at the $10 level or above. They get the movie club, they get the bonus episodes, they get everything you could possibly want. So we would like to thank Craig Cargill, Sean C., Robert Payne, Jeff Liddy, Brian, Matthew Munden, Mark Rodriguez, Jessica Trowbridge, Jay Forness, Francis Adrian, Kevin Gonzalez, Jay Maggio, Eric Process, Arthur Wynn, Scott Rumsey, Richard Hoska, Tracy, Nate, Jason, and Eric Manley. Thank you all so much.
And I would like to thank Daniel Steer, Joseph Luces, Francis Adrian, Ralph Helm, Chelsea Patchell, Samuel Fry, Fran Bull, Sam, Tony Rollins, Courtney Rollins, ooh, we got some Rollinses, Akil Kassam, Elizabeth Maxineer, Elizabeth Geely, Kayla Hagman, Doc Zool, Nicholas Barkley, Kathleen Lemurize, Natasha Napper, Scott Paulo, and Jamie Taylor. I bet I got all of those right. I'm super confident this week.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Sarah Zabzwari, Amy Kutzen, Ann Hesek, Don Lotz, Nose Muffin, Carol Dietrich, Taylor Hughes, T. Ledoux, Savio Nguyen, Eleanor Corkish, Rachel Aluli, Leah Rock, Nicholas Eng, Elizabeth Hines, Nikki Jones, Brian Moon, Brett Gordon, Renee Kolb Nye, Liz Gonzalez. We got two Gonzalez's this week.
Wow.
And Deanna, thank you all very much for being members of the small council.
Does this mean we have to fight the Rollinses?
It's the Gonzalez versus the Rollinses.
Just gotta hope Henry doesn't show up. That'd be a tough one.
Oh no. I was about to say I'm obviously Team Gonzalez, but now I'm not sure. Yeah.
He's a secret airbender.
Don't bet against the here.
Yeah, if Uncle Hank is here, I don't know.
And we're back for the storm. No lock this week, which is, you know, sad. But if we're going to check in on one of our favorite recurring antagonists, this is the last Ethan Rom episode. The man who died in season one kept coming back around, but this will be the last time we see him come back around.
I mean, it is fun that they keep doing this in season six, like bring a character back and then kill them. Like they do it to Aldo, and then I guess Ethan. They don't kill Ethan, but they come back for the one thing and they're done.
And they're out. Everyone got to do their one day on Lost if they wanted to.
They're
do
going.
One day we get to see. Apparently. We get to see Ernst again because he's a teacher at John's school, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's one of my favorite. Oh, I love this season. Once we clear this temple shit, right? The lighthouse is two episodes away. I love that episode. The substance really good because like Ben's like fussing about coffee filters. We'll get there. It's fine.
Ben, help Alex do it.
Oh, tutor her. Let's see. Ethan's been in 15 episodes.
Look at him go.
Good job, buddy. How many seasons does he show up in? Never mind. That's a question that Lost Media is not going to quickly answer for me.
He was in what? He dies in season one, but he also comes back at the beginning of season three, right? When we see the plane crash from Otherton. So we get a little
He's going to come back with all the Juliet stuff in season three anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's in season two because they find the hatch with Rousseau. Is that the girl mission?
Yeah.
Okay. And then he's a baby in season five.
Season five. And then he's here.
He's a preteen in that Ben episode. Ethan Rom, I love you.
He's got to be in season four somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would just love if he's in every episode. But if he were, then I would feel like, you know,
people would have
Lostpedia would have known that.
There would have been a Mapathora energy page.
There would be a bullet point about it. Anyway, okay. Storm time. Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah, let's try to answer unanswerable questions about how claiming works.
How does one get claimed? I just have so many questions, right? It's unanswerable, but like, we get it with Saeed, right? They put a dead man in the smoke-infected waters. That clear as day to me. I get it. I completely get it. He probably swallowed some of that smoke-infected water. Like, all right, he's infected. Claire, like if Claire died at some point and were brought back, but we don't know that. All we know is that she just like wandered off into the jungle, sat in a cabin, and then, you know, and by the time she's in the cabin, she's clearly, you know, doing some of the stuff that Naveen Andrews does this season. So, like,
my assumption, and maybe there'll be a way to parse this as we get deeper into the on island stuff with Claire, and we'll have to like pay very close attention to what she says. But okay, so we're assuming that Christian Shepherd in the cabin was Smokey.
Yeah.
So maybe just hanging out with him was enough for Claire to get poisoned.
She says this thing where she's like, you all left me and I only had one friend and he's my friend and her friend is the fucking smoke monster. Mm-hmm.
The smoke monster pretending to be the father she never met.
Right.
But if you're claimed, you could still reason for yourself. Like, Saeed still tries to stab the smoke monster. It's more like, what was that? Like, all the definitions of that Japanese word you gave in the poem actually makes more sense. Like, Claire's basically trauma is basically like post-pregnancy, you know, like uncleanness or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
sure,
she abandoned her child. And,
oh, sure. The uncleanliness of having given birth.
I mean, it's gross, but it makes more sense than she drank some muddy water by accident. And, you know, but the idea that it's more like a spiritual uncleanliness. Once you become spiritually unclean, you can be claimed.
And the French boys, how did the French boys get claimed then?
Well, they were, the one.
One of them was shitty. One of them was shitty, but like Rousseau's. Robert seemed very nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, and here,
what did Robert do?
We don't know. We don't know. He might have gone down in the temple, drank some muddy water. Like, we don't. Here's, I guess the water wouldn't have been muddy.
The water was clean.
An additional question about this: the claiming thing. Is this something that can only happen to candidates? Because if so, that explains. So, because we know that, like, the whole idea, right, of candidates is that they're being brought to the island by Jacob.
I'm looking up to see if Robert is a candidate. Go
yeah, that's a good one to look up. Is like, okay, so Jacob's bringing these candidates, and he's trying to prove to the man in black that humans won't fuck it up, and they constantly do. But this feels like one sort of way for the man in black to like recruit people to his team. There aren't very many people on his team, but like, he seems, if he can recruit candidates, then I guess this kind of makes sense. I still don't like it, and I still agree with my mom that what they do to Saeed in season 6 is almost unforgivable. Like, Saeed could have had a much better character arc.
It's so bad.
And but the idea that like there is this eternal competition between the man in black and Jacob, and that if the man in black can really get to somebody, he can turn people, but only if it's only limited to candidates, then I think that makes more sense as to why like more of these people are not poisoned or haven't been poisoned yet.
And like, maybe it's some sort of weakness of spirit, and I'm willing to write off the Frenchmen, who I don't really know very well, as maybe being like weak and amenable to coercion, right? And I'm willing to write off Claire in that regard, because
she went through some shit.
She's
right there,
you know, whatever. I can't put Saeed in that camp ever, and I just can't.
He shot a child.
I'm not saying he didn't go shoot shit, but like, well, here's what I'll say. Like, this episode clears up, or sets up Sawyer to be the next person that Smokey goes after because he smells vulnerability on him, right? Because Sawyer is grieving Juliet. And so, I mean, like, not to spoil it, but there's just this hilarious moment where, like, your Smokey camera POV and he, like, zooms up to the barracks and you hear, like, I don't know, Jethro Tull playing something, like, very, like, I'm sad and I'm country. Metallica. I don't know what it was. Anyway. And, like, and Sawyer's there just, like, drunk on Dharma beer and John Locke Smokey is like, aha, someone I can take down a ladder into a cave and definitely turn into another one of my minions. And it doesn't work. Not for a second does it work on Sawyer. And he like plays along, but like it doesn't work. And I don't know. It's just here's what I think the answer is. And I've said this before. There isn't a consistent answer. So it's a problem I can't solve. Mm-hmm. That's what I think it
is. Yeah. I mean, I think the show, what the show is trying to tell us with Saeed is that his behavior, his actions coming back to the island, he made a mistake thinking that he could kill Ben, right? And that ultimately maybe showed a weakness of spirit, the whole shooting a child thing. But yeah, it's weird because the other characters that we're talking about have like an agency in this, like Claire, yes, has a lot of trauma at the end of season three, basically, when she leaves Aaron. And she's amenable. Sawyer, tons of trauma. And you can see why the Man in Black would want to go recruit him. But the Saeed thing is weird because Saeed was dead. And he seemed to be not necessarily at peace with that, but like that conversation he has with Hurley as he's like bleeding out in the premiere about like sort of realizing that he's about to die and sort of wondering where he's going to go. That I don't see as weakness of spirit. That is just like, he's realizing that this is it. And then he is, because of the decisions that are made by the others, and Jacob ultimately sets this in motion, he's sort of forced into the situation where he is then claimed. So it doesn't quite compute because it's not because of weakness of spirit. It's because a ghost god showed up to Hurley and was like, no, we need Saeed, like for plot reasons. You got to get him to the temple. And I think that's why the Saeed thing works so much less than even the Claire stuff. Claire being quote unquote claimed.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I could add into this is another layer of uncertainty, which is that Saeed breaks the rules because they kill him and he comes back to life wrong, but they actually kill him and he's a candidate. So doesn't that break the rules? Like Jack doesn't hold him under the water in the resurrection pool,
but it isn't
right. So like the reason they are trying to get Saeed to basically commit suicide via Jack is because they can't kill Saeed because he's a candidate, right?
Right. Except they did. They killed Saeed.
Sort of.
Get the rules.
Well,
temple,
well, technically, like, Roger killed Saeed. Because Roger's the one who shot him in the 1970s. And that's his original cause of death. The others just failed to properly resurrect him.
Maybe. But then, like, maybe it's not that the water didn't work. It's that Saeed was claimed because... So it seems like being claimed is, if you're in the writer's room and you're Damon Lindelof or working for Damon Lindelof, and you're like, Jacob gets to choose these candidates. And you're like, well, what does the other guy get to choose? He's just, like, knocking off candidates? He can't use the candidates at all? So I could see the idea of claiming as being, like, the shadow candidacy. There just isn't rules to candidates, so therefore there isn't rules to claiming. Mm-hmm. And it gets very frustrating because they're intertwined. They're the same people.
Here's an update on the Frenchies.
Yeah.
Just so we don't get an email. Montong, who was the asshole, the one-armed asshole, his name is on the list.
Okay.
And there is a Rousseau on the list, but the question is... Is that Robert? Is that Danielle? Or is that Alex? We don't know.
I guess it wouldn't be totally nonsensical if it was Robert. Because that would at least explain that. Because then why did Jacob and the Man in Black leave Danielle alone for 16 years? Right? Like if she was a candidate.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like, in the words of Aldo, he may be one of them. and as we know from the other side of the storm, that's because there's one Quan written on the wall. So Jin may be a candidate because at least Sun or Jin.
They're like, well, shit, we can't kill either Quan.
Because... Even your shittiest god was just like, first names, who gives a fuck, right? There's only going to be one Smith that ever comes to the island. You know,
Jacob, he just didn't think this whole candidate thing. He didn't. He was just rushing through it. I think he didn't. He was too busy fishing and living in a foot to really take proper notes of the candidates.
So we have in our notes here that, you know, Jack is told he died. And Miles is also asking where the afterlife is. I kind of didn't chime up when
Saeed is told he died.
Saeed is told he died. I kind of didn't pipe up in that part during the calm because it's like, isn't that just trying to throw us off the scent of what the sideways is?
Is it?
I don't know.
How does Saeed describe what
he said? There was nothing. There was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So no, after.
I don't know that that's intentionally what it is, because like Saeed dying wasn't like a real death,
right?
Yeah, like, and I think that's actually why Miles is so perturbed, not because of like Saeed's description of the afterlife, but just because he's like, this wasn't even a death, there was never a death here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never, whatever this is, it's not life and death, because I know, because he gave the same look to dead, quote unquote, dead Saeed as he does to live Saeed, which is like, all of this is wrong. From my ghost bro perspective, this is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I interpret Miles's.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've always read the look that Miles gives in the episode we watched last week as like, Miles is confused because if Saeed is dead, he should be able to read him. And if he can't read him, if there's really just nothing there, That also lines up with what Saeed experienced, which is like, nothing happened. I was just nothing for a while, and then I'm awake again, you know?
I guess I agree. It just read to me as a rewatcher, as a way to shut down the idea of an afterlife really quickly after Juliet's sort of one foot in either reality moment. Because if you did that, like somebody's going to be waiting for someone else to die. Presumably, if they're paying attention.
The Juliet thing is so specific, like her blipping back and forth, that like, I don't think that anyone watching for the first time would pick up on that, right? Like, because what she said, her last words, it worked, are just, it's confusing until the literal last episode of the series.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, then you would have questions about, you know, what that was throughout the whole series. And so I would be paying attention to people who died. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was like the idea of taking, I don't disagree with Miles's look last episode. It's just for me, the banter between Miles and Hurley this episode is all metatextual storytelling. There's a zombie joke and there's a, hey, there isn't an afterlife. Like, just a reminder, in the Miles's view, and now Saeed's telling him again, there like isn't an afterlife.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess that could be. I mean, they didn't have to work, if that's what they were doing, they didn't have to work that hard to throw people off of what the Flash Sideways is. The Flash Sideways is very confusing.
You guys are probably right, but again, this episode reads like a whole bunch of good ideas mixed up into a mediocre like overall product. And so I could see it being like, you know, let's toss these people like a bone. Maybe it's exactly what you're talking about and what I'm talking about. It's just those two flavors don't fit together.
If we're tracking, how many days do we have left until the end of the world?
I think it's eight more days of on island time.
Eight more days. At one point, we were tracking who's in their finale outfits, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sawyer is still not in his final look. Like, I think he changed into this Henley, but it's still not his last look.
Sure.
Because obviously, Sawyer ends it all in a button-down. That's his MO. But, of course, Kate is in that gray Gap shirt until the end.
Is fake lock in his final? I mean, we'll see. Probably... next week.
No, is he wearing the t-shirt and the cargo pants yet? I think he's still in his business casual look, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
Eventually, he'll change into a more Lockean look, and that's his finale look. He's got the belted t-shirt and the cargo pants. Yeah, just in case literally nobody was interested. I think Jack and Kate and Hurley are there, and Sawyer has one more wardrobe change in the next 8 days. I think he's wearing it when... I think he changes into it when Locke picks him up. Like, once Locke picks him up out of the barracks, then that's that's it for him. No, but the reason I had the whole "what happened to me, you died" thing in here is it reminds me also, of course, of one of my favorite parts of the finale when Jack says, like, "I died too." Like, that whole "you died." You can let go now. Mm-hmm. You died, Jack. It's all that sort of thing. So, yeah. I want to talk about the love triangle thing because, like, I know that Dave, you said in the comm that, like, you're like, well, that we didn't even need to, like, nail that coffin shut. It was already over, blah, blah. But reading a lot of the recaps of the time, a lot of people, and I think our commies are assuming this too, that, like, they're going to go there. That, like, because a bunch of recappers were like, oh, I thought Kate was off to seduce Sawyer. I was surprised that instead he was still sad about Juliet, this thing that happened two whole episodes ago. And I'm like, yeah, this is like, This is the last gasp of the love triangle. I think that what Kate learns here, you know, puts that out of her mind forever. She's like, no, he really meant it with Juliet. And so that's it. Mm-hmm. It's not happening. I will switch back to Team Jack and stay there. But I don't know that that's apparent to everyone watching at the time, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that does
not
make sense.
Not that was a spoiler or anything. It wasn't, but I was just sort of like, I'm delighted. That's another reason I love that doc scene. So I was like, Kate's like, well.
That's done.
Yeah. It is what it is.
And, you know, I think that I wouldn't blame anyone, call me wise, if they still wouldn't put it past Lost to try and revive the love triangle, because they've been doing it for 5 seasons and they did it right there at the end of season 5. And so, yeah, no, I like that as well. I like that this is it. This is done. They get a good emotional scene. Unlike Dave, I would not cut that scene from this episode or the season.
I think what it is it's a scene that is supposed to say the love triangle is done because they're afraid people are going to worry that they didn't go back to the love triangle. And then to use it, they use the, like, laziest heteronormative shortcut of storytelling, which is he had a hidden engagement ring. When the fuck did he buy that ring and then bury it underneath and then not give it to her with swan wine the second before, like, Jack comes back? It's just like, it's a storytelling hitch.
Have we seen that
saved
ring
by
before?
Good performances?
No.
It just comes out of nowhere, and because it's like, of course, the only thing that would make a straight woman realize that the straight man she is pining after is not available to her anymore is because he was willing to get married and legally own her as property. That's sure. Why I don't like it.
Dave is trying to. Oh, that's not why you don't like it. You're just trying to high road feminism me right now.
No, I'm not trying to high road anyone. That's why I don't like it. It's a scene that we don't need, and it's written because people don't know how to watch television correctly, and then it gives them dumb storytelling shorthand back.
Oh,
just
God.
So they don't pick it up correctly.
It's also
I've never disagreed with you more.
It's the most very 2010 well. Thing about this episode.
Marriage is the heteronormative.
Oh my God.
They're not a real couple until they get married.
You can't call the institution of marriage heteronormative when gay people get married now.
Oh, that's true.
That was not happening at the time period this was happening. And that, therefore, doesn't happen on television anymore.
Yeah.
Like, this is a trope that is dumb. Like, I knew when they won the Jungle of Kistery moment that everybody was into Sawyer and Juliet. And I feel like the show was really good at telegraphing that. And to go back here, again, a scene that's performed excellently by both people, just didn't need it.
So is it just the ring then? Like, if you were to fix this scene, because Joanna and I are outvoting you, we're keeping the scene, but we have to now fix this scene.
There's no rings. It's just the two people. and they have the exact same conversation on the dock where he made her stay, which I saw, which I also emotionally connect to. Like, that conversation works great. Or you just let Sawyer do it. You do a more extended version of Locke finds drunk, sad Sawyer, but he still hefts up the ring and he still throws it away. It's the ring being used as the wedge to end the love triangle definitively. That's not any better reason than just he really loved Juliet.
I don't think that's... okay, fine. I'm going to fucking fight right now, okay? I don't think it's the ring, because she has that look on her face when she sees him in their old room, and she doesn't see the ring at that point. He's got it in his hand in a fucking bag that he dug up in a shoebox that he hid on her floorboard, whatever. But like... which is the only way they could time capsule that thing from 1977. Fine. But like... she's like, fuck, like, this is the wrong move. I should not have come out. He said, don't follow me. Just the same way that Jack is like, don't come after me. Don't come back for me. And she does earlier in the season. Sawyer says, don't follow me. And she does. And she sees it in that moment. She's like, fuck, I shouldn't have done this. And it's, so it's not the ring. The ring really does like drive something home for Kate, and that's about commitment. And you can judge Kate for her like heteronormative stance about what commitment means if you want to, but like, you know, Sawyer, like Kate's whole thing with Sawyer in Egg Town and all that like stupid stuff, that was all like paid to commitment. And remember that like that Cassidy was like, you know, this is why Sawyer didn't want to be with you, or like whatever, it's because of all, you know, whatever Cassidy's version of events are, right? And so Kate's like swallowing all of that, but like it can hurt if you cared for someone, and you know, it's that whole like when Harry met Sally thing of like he just didn't want to marry me, like it can hurt when someone you care about is like willing to go all in on someone and that someone isn't you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if that going all in, like the three of us are not married. You know what I mean? Like Dave, you are in a like long-term great relationship, and like marriage does not mean something to you on one side or the other in terms of your commitment to that person. Like we're not, none of us are here like stumping for the institution of marriage. It needs to be whatever, but it can mean that to people. And I think that that's an okay thing for it to be a piece of information, but it is not the wedge, because that moment came earlier for Kate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think that's it's a good point, because the love triangle, I think, is dead before the dock scene.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I don't know, they just needed, Josh Holloway needed something to throw into the ocean, because that's a trope they want to use, is like, well, he needs like a totem that represents his thing with Juliet, and it, you know, making it a wedding ring isn't the most inspired choice, but
it should have been like a pressed yellow flower in a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was trying to, as you guys were talking, I was trying to think of like what a better item would have been, because
bandana.
Yeah, we still need him to throw something into the ocean. Her medical, some of her medical tools, maybe her
throwing the medical tool,
her copy of stethoscope, Carrie.
Take that, Carrie.
It's a book. That would be a very emotional scene. Sawyer having to throw
Sawyer
a book into the ocean.
Yeah, that's true.
Guess I'm out of the book club forever.
I'm told through notes that we have a Mikhail theory.
Oh, yes.
Since he's catching that ring at the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
Well, I mean, okay, so we know that like Ben came back because he got put in the pool when it was clear, right? Baby Ben came back. And he came back a little wrong too, but not as wrong as Saeed, because sure, his water was clear.
He didn't
right?
get claimed by the Men in Black. He just got claimed by the island, I guess.
question mark? Okay, there's degrees of wrongness, and Ben came back 1 degree, and Sawyer's at like at least 65%. But so one of the recappers is like, is this how Mikhail kept coming back? Did they just keep dunking
just
him
back
in, that
in
pool?
The temple?
Oh, get Mikhail back in the pool. But he died again.
They call it Mikhail's pool.
Oh. It's not as good as Mallorca, but it'll do.
Well, that's how they named the frozen yogurt stand after his cow. There's a cow sharing deal. He gives them the milk, and in exchange, they dunk him in the pool whenever he has a little mishap.
Neil, was there a Giacchino track from Through the Looking Glass called Mikhail's Navy?
I don't. Maybe.
Oh, there should have been.
I'll look.
Okay. Dogen's baseball is introduced here, but it gets a payoff. I love that moment though when Jack's like, "What's that?" And Dogen's like, "A baseball." Ever heard of it?
Fuck you, Jack Shepherd.
But that's about, you know, his. But he does have a good moment when he's like, you know, I was brought here just like you. And Jack's like, what do you mean? Dogen's like, what do you think I fucking mean, dude? You know what I mean? But we find out later, right, that Dogen's son died and it's connected to his dead son. That's a dead son totem. Mm-hmm. Is that baseball? Speaking of artifacts that we hold on to remember dead ones.
Yeah, he could have thrown a baseball in the ocean. Get some distance on that thing. And then this last point, it appears that for those of you that don't remember, Kate leaves the temple, talks to Sawyer, Moon comes back to the temple. Great, great use of story there.
I mean, I think that is annoying. And it's funny because I was reading Noel Murray's recap on AV Club and he was like, oh, I was so worried that Kate was just going to like leave the temple and then come back to the temple and that would have been really annoying. And I'm like, oh no, Noel of the past, that's what happens.
It's almost as if you didn't need that whole scene in Dharmaville with the wedding ring.
No way. Next time you get really excited about some fucking like lore reveal, I'm going to tear it to shreds. Just you wait.
Mm-hmm. That'll probably be next week. You know, there's a lot of lore. It is season 6.
I have a brewing theory.
What if we go down a ladder to a cave and there's rocks and a fucking scale?
Yeah, the inside joke scale. That's fantastic. It's top 10 moment of all of Lost.
You know, if I were to cut anything from that episode, it would be the cave scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you'd never know what the numbers meant, would you?
I would, because it's in the lighthouse.
Well, that's a different version than what the numbers mean. Oh my god, season 6. All right, Neil, where are we going next week?
Well, next week we're going to what I think Joanna mentioned earlier is a very good episode of season 6. It's the fourth episode of the season, so to mirror season 1, it is a John Locke episode. It is The Substitute. It's a Locke and Ben episode. There's some good Ben stuff in there. So yeah, it's going to be good times with The Substitute.
And until you get to join me for The Substitute next week, where could people find your work around the internet? We'll start this week with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on VanityFair.com, where I spent way too long making Mare of Easttown gifts. And I believe I figured out who the killer of Mare of Easttown is, and right. That feels good. It's a good old mystery.
Could you have done one without the other, really? Thank you for your service.
It's true. It was one of those, like, I have a theory. Now I need to rewatch every single episode, which is what I did with my weekend. You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. I was on the Screen Drafts podcast that's up this week. It's a 5-hour Shakespeare draft with Brian Cogman. Ever heard of him? Game of Thrones fame. Graham Skipper and the great Morgan Lee Lanker from Entertainment Weekly. So that is another place you can hear me. And I've got an interview with Evan Peters on Still Watching. So, you know, it's just a bevy of opportunities for you to hear me babble on.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com or on Twitter at rejects at one perfect shot. And don't forget to follow the Storm Podcast at Storm Podcast. We've got all kinds of fun social media stuff going on right now. And then, you know, at some point in early June, we're going to start Stream Together Watch Alone in our Patreon again. That's going to be exciting.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also hear me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast next week when you hear this. We are having one of our Quarter Quells, which are fun episodes where we each bring a movie and talk about our personal relationship to it. We're doing summer blockbusters, and I'm doing 1994's The Mask, because I was 10 and Jim Carrey was awesome. If you want to listen to that, you can find it wherever fantastic podcasts are found. Otherwise, you could just come back here for more Lost and for me telling you to not fall down.